right, we're clear.
Yay. Okay, so I have some post-show stuff that I was taking notes during because I have some follow-up questions. So we were talking about you being in the Midwest a lot. We didn't really quite get to how you got here. How did you get here? When did you get to California?
August or September of 2019, moved out here. I was the Michigan tech rep for about a year. Michigan, Ohio, little Indiana, little Pennsylvania, little West Virginia, and little Kentucky. And then this territory opened up and my boss knew I liked trails and 100 milers and California. I went to grad school out here near San Diego for a little bit. So he shot me the idea and it worked out. Just jumped.
That's so cool. That's a really nice thing for a boss to know about you. That is really cool. And we're so thankful because we love you around here. And then I was a little curious about your younger siblings for hockey. I'm just very interested in hockey. Did they keep going for hockey? Are they still doing hockey? What do they do now? Are they active at all?
I mean, kind of when you're done, there's something called beer league, which is just like adult league hockey. Yeah. Sometimes they jump in on that occasionally. But they're pretty much done, for the most part.
They're still in the Midwest.
Yeah. Yep. Still in Michigan.
And then I always like to bring like a new sport to me is still like some people have been running their whole life that we have on the show, but then there's so many people who do a different sport and then it turns into running or it turns into a different type of adventuring. But I always like to think about the connection that hockey has to running. And if you can speak to, is there any, or you're just like, they're completely different or, you know, any of that?
I think especially the last few years with trail running, it makes a lot of sense with like hockey players or soccer players. Cause it's an hour and a half game or whatever. And it's an endurance activity, but you're also doing like a lot of little sprinting in between. So like as you're growing up doing that, I think there's something to be said for just like how your muscle fiber distribution develops. A lot of those like soccer players and hockey players, a lot of them, like there are fast runners. They just need to take like a little bit of time to develop like the running specific coordinations in their aerobic system, but they can be really, really good, especially on trail, because it just seems like their body's a lot better able to absorb those quick little hits of up and down hills, and their heart rates will recover a little bit faster at the top of a climb. And they're just kind of used to that stop and sprint and stop and sprint over long periods of time.
I was going to say, it's just like these constant bursts of effort, I guess. Like, you know, you're going for the puck, you know, you grab the puck, you recover, you pass to somebody else, you go for it again. It's just this constant coming and going.
Yeah. And there's just like a ton of overall body awareness and coordination there too, that translates over really well, because you can just understand what your body's doing and know how to control it in terms of like where you're feeling tension and how to adjust your form. And I know like before every game, we'd be doing like ladder drills and stuff like that, which I'm sure your soccer players do. So like with downhill running, like you can find the best line a little bit easier and recover a little bit easier if you kick something, or, you know, you just got those quick feet.
Well, and I was just thinking about your journey, because you went from like this deeply family, almost like community. And then you went and ran a marathon by yourself and you're like, this sucks. And then it's like you found some friends and you're like, oh, it doesn't suck so bad. So it's like, how important is that community around you, whether they're supporting your runs or, you know, just being your friends? Like, it's so important to have people around you that are like-minded, you know, that want you to succeed and maybe are a little bit competitive with you. That's community's like so important. And sometimes you don't even realize that that was the piece that's missing. But mm-hmm. I think you figured it out. You're like, I'm not doing this alone again. I'm going to suffer with other people.
Yeah. That social facilitation effect is a real thing.
Mm. Totally. And then we didn't get to this in the interview. And I just like, this is so my jam. But the 6 days under the dome, what is it called again?
6 days in the dome.
Tell me about that. That is so my jam. I love it so much.
It is awesome. It's, I mean, you're in an ice rink on a 443 meter track around the outside of two rinks. And that event, I mean, they're firing off different events all week long. Like there is a 6 day event, but they have 24 hour events every day. There's, I think, a 72, a couple 48s, depending on what you want to do. And it's a lot of like national and world records have been set there by different individuals, and age group records and things like that. A lot of people qualifying for the world's team for US 24 hours, things like that. That's kind of the reason I was trying to sneak onto that team. But yeah, it's a blast. Awesome, awesome people. Tons of fun, but you're just running around in little circles.
How did you take anyone? I have a lot of questions. Did you take anyone with you? How did you train for that? And who told you about that event?
I mean, I was aware of the event. Like that's where Zach Bitter set a few of his records. And I was looking to do the 24 hour, the SF one day, that was 24 hours around Chrissy Field. But a few weeks before that event, they canceled it because they couldn't get a permit or something. I think it may have something to do with the Headlands Park system and maybe a story of a runner getting attacked by a coyote or something like that, where they are no longer doing overnight events there, or it was just harder to do overnight events there, even though it's on the other side of the bridge. So I was scrambling, and the only other 24-hour event that was certified before the deadline for the team was 6 days in the dome in Wisconsin. So kind of found my way out there logistically, but couldn't have a crew or anything. So just soloed that, and that's kind of what bit me out there too, because I was having a really, really good race, and then I had to stop for a little too long, dirtling around with some headphones and phones and chargers and other stuff. And then just ended up going hypothermic and could not recover. Like I tried for a while, put on all my clothes and like the legs just locked up, and yeah. I had the soup. I was walking, I was trying to jog, I was stretching, we were massaging. We went outside the rink for a little while. Like it just wasn't coming back. And at that point, it was the week before Western States, and I knew I was going to have to work and do a lot of things at States in terms of setup, because our events coordinator wasn't able to make it out. So I was like, there's no way I'm going to hit my 150 miles without completely obliterating myself, if like yeah. it's even possible at this point. So called it at 90 miles, and which is okay. I still had so much fun. I love that. That 24 hour event is just, it's a blast. And everybody says like, oh, don't you get bored? And it's,
you don't, so
freaking mentally stimulating. Cause I mean, there's other people out there, you're watching the competition and stuff, but you're so in tune with what's going on in your body to try and like address any issues you have before they may happen, and keep up on like, and nutrition and electrolytes and hydration and bathrooms and pacing and form. And it's just so much fun. And it was really weird because we switched directions every 4 hours at that event. And that was a really weird experience that I should have probably practiced before, because that was jarring, where it felt like I was running, but it felt like I was running left-handed. Like it was just way off, and not, it felt very clumsy and weird. But
never, like I've never thought about that. I grew up running on the track. Mm-hmm. That's my preferred medium for running is on the track. But my coaches have always, since I was little, always had us run backwards on it. You know, like we would swap all the time. We would run all different ways. So when I did a little bit when one day in Auburn that Paulo did a couple, I think I did it twice as a relay. And so I had like 8 hours or something. When they switched, I didn't have a problem. But you know what? Now that I'm looking back in like my memories, I remember people being a little like weird for a while, the going the other way.
Yeah.
It is definitely something people should practice. I've never thought about it because I do that. Like if I'm running on the track for a while, I'll turn around and run the other way. But yeah, that's a good note. People train both ways.
Yeah.
That's so good. Would you go back?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Cool. And it's that 400 meters or 443, whatever yours was, it goes by so fast and it feels so, you get like an instant boost every time you do a lap. So if it takes you 2 minutes or 4 minutes or 1 minute or whatever, you get another like notch. And so it's like a little boost every time you go around. So it's like, it is really encouraging every time you go around. You're like,
oh yeah,
10 laps, 50 laps. Like it feels good. It feels
you
really
just,
good.
Yeah. Especially when like things are going smoothly and you're just so dialed in and like every lap is like 224, 224, 224, 224. And you're like, oh, this is, I'm the man.
Mine you know? Was never that. Sometimes I would take 45 minutes because I would stop in the food tent and hang out, but it still was fun.
Yeah. No, it's great. And that whole crew is amazing. And like, it's such a fun time. And I'm intrigued. I mean, I want to try and qualify for the Desert Solstice at one point in time. Where, I mean, it's an Aravaipa, all the big guns in the 24-hour distance and 100-mile distance are out there going for records and stuff. That looks like such a sweet event. And then even like last year, the national championship was at Fat Ox, another in Phoenix-ish, I think, another Aravaipa event. But that one was on a mile loop on concrete around a park. And I think that mile loop kind of sounds like a fun idea too. So it's always new things to experiment with and figure out.
Very cool. We had a question also from the Facebook folks watching, and we had a question asking about trends in shoes. And so carbon plates, I mean, they've been around for a while, I think at least a year or two, if I remember, but you can correct me. And so we were kind of wondering, our commenter was kind of wondering if you are aware of any new trends or anything to be aware of in the shoe development, as long as you don't disclose any trade secrets.
I don't know the direction they're quite going with that. In terms of the new stuff, there have been some cool prototypes coming out recently from other brands with very interesting geometries. Like, I still think we have so much to figure out in terms of these new materials and geometries and plate geometries and characteristics, where, I mean, sometimes it's a little frustrating for me because I'll have these like ideas of like, hey, like, why do we really have to have all this heel material on these shoes? And like tracking where you're actually at with the center of pressure across the bottom of your foot, how much of this is really necessary and how much can we lose? And then you have shoes like the Mizuno, Rebellion Pro 2 that just came out. That has a really cool geometry. Alta and 361 have something similar prototypes that have been shown on Instagram. That stuff's really cool. You got Puma kind of extending the plate out a little further in front of the big toe, which is going to theoretically kind of lengthen people's strides or give them more of a stronger toe off kind of thing. There's a lot of fun stuff there. I just think people need to there's some other really big shoe specific podcasts that are really, really hyped on a lot of these shoes, and they kind of poo-poo on some of, anything that's not super top of the line that the pros are wearing. They want the super top of the line stuff, even though they're 3-4 hour marathoners. And you have companies, I mean, like the Convira Pro from Saucony, that's a super shoe, but more tuned to like a 9-minute mile pace, or there's a new one by Salomon, which is similar, which uses all the same materials as their super top of the line elite shoe, but just tunes them and changes the plate orientations a little bit differently. So it's more efficient for a slower runner. That's a really cool idea, because I mean, a lot of these top shoes are specifically tuned for 2-hour marathoners at this point that weigh $120. And when you're going a little longer than that, like it's going to be really stiff for people. Like I worked the Chicago Marathon 3 or 4 years ago. It was the big Vaporfly year when they were pink and green. And, you know, there's like 40,000 people in that race, but we were watching from the 40K mark, everybody, like the whole race come through. And there were hundreds and hundreds of people that came through doing like the same kind of like super shoe tiptoe shuffle, where you could just tell their feet were just blown. And they looked like they were running like half an hour to an hour slower than where they should have been based on like their kits and how they looked and everything like that. So, I mean, it's a cool new tool, but it's like a tool, and then you need to use them responsibly. And like I said, what's kind of intriguing, but scary for me is like, there's a lot, like the top hype shoes right now are like the ASICS Super Blast or like the Rebel 4 that's about to come out by New Balance. Like you're getting a lot of these really like high stack height, high cushy shoes, and they feel great and they're light and everything, but like people are using them as an everyday shoe. And like we know, like if you just over support or over cushion or make a shoe too stiff, like your feet are going to get stiffer and your feet are going to get a little weaker. And there's always like a mix of, you know, like finding the way to load your feet properly so they still stay really functional. And like kind of like my rule of thumb is like you always want to be in like the least amount of cushioning that allows you to get through the duration of whatever activity is that you're doing with comfy feet, you know. And that's going to be different for different types of runs, you know. But when you go on any of like the social media or like Reddits and stuff like that, people are like, oh, my easy day shoe is like this super max cushion crazy shoe. And it's like, you don't need all that. Like if you're going easy, like you can cheek it back down, like just get like a normal shoe. It's going to be perfectly fine for that. You can probably go to like a lightweight trainer or something different. That's going to be way cheaper, way more durable. I don't know if that answered that person's question at all, but
Yeah,
some fun directions in the footwear game. And I personally think there's going to be a second barefoot revolution coming on soon. Just based upon a lot of the scientific literature that's come out, even in like the Journal of Nature these last few years. And these people, like, they're not running in the shoes. They're just wearing them around casually. And we're seeing tremendous effects in terms of like foot strength and like intrinsic foot muscle volume, and even that, like reduced fall rates in geriatric samples and things like that, where nobody's done a specific study to like tie it into running injuries and performance or things like that. But it just kind of, I've personally experienced it, and it makes so much sense where like, if you have strong mobile feet, you're going to be a much more durable runner, resilient runner.
And like, I work with children, and how important it is for my kiddos to be barefoot in all weather. It is no secret that having strong feet, you have to do that somehow. You're not going to do that by running in cushy shoes on the road. Like there has to be, like you said, there has to be like a balance of like what using the tools properly. So hopefully we see more of that barefoot stuff, because it is like so important. So people's feet are like like so soft. You need to be outside. You need to be walking on tile floor, maybe not, but you know, like it's so important from like the babies that I have when they're first starting walking, you don't put them in shoes. You know, you have to like make sure their toes are out. You have to like ground them. And just because you learned how to walk as an adult doesn't mean that you can't go back to those core values of like having super strong feet. I don't know how many, I couldn't even tell you the last time I did a dynamic warm up in shoes. It was ingrained in me in college. Like your shoes don't come to practice with your shoes on. You're going to warm up and barefoot. You're going to do your, like we, it's been a huge push at the collegiate level because I'm old. So that was a while ago. And when I came to trail running and I saw people running with like in Gingies and they were like in their Lunas, I was like, that's rough, but I get it. I get what you're doing. They're like, we have a local around here. He's like, if he runs in shoes, it really hurts his whole body. Like he has to do it because he was he started running a little bit later here. So he didn't have that base. So now he's like, I can't, I have to really, this is my balance. I don't really, you know, have a lot of support for my runs. And then when I go to work, I put on shoes and have that balance because he needs it for his body. So yeah, it is really interesting to, I love that you said that, like here are the tools, like use them appropriately for everything, you know, for every type of runner you are. I love that so much. So yes, that answered the question.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us on the after show with post show here. We'll look forward to getting it out posted and we will see you on the trails. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.